Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Welcome. Thank you for being here. We're going to start today a gosho, I don't know what to call this one. Is it a treatise? Is it doctrinal? Is it intimate? Is it personal? Is it scholarly? I think it's all of the above. If you're just starting out in Buddhism, if you've been practicing for several years, if you're an advanced, if you've been practicing over 10 years, you should already know this. But even so, Nichiren's going to break down the study of Buddhism. Everything from cliches to anecdotes that we hear about the way Buddhism has been taught, why it differs, why there are different sects, how did that happen, why are there different levels, if you will. What are the five periods of Shakyamuni's teachings? How did it start? How did it evolve? How has history moved throughout history? Why are there changes in interpretation throughout the history of Buddhism? And how has it come to where it is today? What is the most advanced Mahayana teachings, and why does it seem that it's sometimes totally different than earlier teachings? All of these questions about the various interpretations, if you will, and which one should we consider to be the utmost, right? This question has, in a way, followed Buddhism since the day after Shakyamuni Buddha left this earth, left his humanly form. This, as you might surmise, is not a short gosho, but I submit to you, it is a very important one. Now, for those of you who have a voracious need for answers to all of those kinds of questions, and you like to study like myself, this should be one of the first things that you read from Nichiren. If you're someone who is not certain how to approach others or how to answer these kinds of questions from beginners and even well-practiced others, this is the kind of information, I think, that easily feeds the Sangha. When you get together with others, whether you just, you've got a new person amongst you, or you're just getting together to study and you, all of you know each other for some time, this gosho has information in it that will constantly bring insights into your practice. Why Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, for instance? Why a Gohansan? Why didn't we start out that way from the get-go? Here's a mandala, go practice, right? All of these sorts of questions that sometimes don't get uttered, but everybody thinks at some point in their practice, this is the gosho. So, yes, there will be several parts to this gosho. When will I stop talking about it and start actually reading it? Answer now. It is called The Selection of the Time. And for those who've practiced for a while, you know that this issue or this idea of time constantly comes up in our study, in our practice, right? So I submit to you that those with those kinds of questions will find that this is a very important gosho. So he, in fact, Nietzsche knows that this is an important treatise that he's sending out to everyone. And he subtitles it, Nichiren, Disciple of Shakyamuni Buddha. So in case that there's still any confusion among us, among the Sangha, among those who were following or are students of Nichiren, even in his day, he was making it clear. I am a student just like you. I'm not special. I'm not an original Buddha. I'm not any of these other titles people want to ascribe to me. I am a disciple of Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakyamuni Buddha is the source of all of this. So that's the first thing to clear up. Because there are groups out there that want to, we live in an authoritarian world, always have. There are always those who want to pound their chest louder than everyone else, claim some kind of superiority. And Nichiren rails about this all the time, and yet there are modern sects out there that want to claim that Nichiren is the original, the first above all. No. Nichiren himself is telling you, I am a disciple of Shakyamuni Buddha. I'm not inventing anything new. I'm simply clarifying the teachings of my teacher and all those teachers before me that also are disciples of Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakyamuni Buddha is the first, the original, the founder. And all of us are trying desperately to practice his teaching correctly. And because Shakyamuni Buddha's teaching is the experience of enlightenment. Can't put it any more plainly than that. So, Nichiren, disciple of Shakyamuni Buddha, he begins. When it comes to studying the teachings of Buddhism, one must first learn to understand the time. In the past, when the Buddha, great universal wisdom, excellence, appeared in the world, he remained for a period of 10 small kalpas without preaching a single sutra. Now again, this is in the form of expedient means. So please understand, Buddha, great universal wisdom, excellence, is a state of mind, not a person. Buddhism is about the mind. Another way of saying that is that Buddha, great universal wisdom, excellence, is an emanation of Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakyamuni Buddha is the source. So all of these other Buddhas are simply examples of the extant Buddhahood in the world. Wisdom excellence, universal wisdom excellence, is an adjective, isn't it? It's a compound adjective, if you will, of this Buddha nature, right? And what he's saying is it appeared in the world. He remained for a period of 10 small kalpas without preaching a single sutra. In other words, this enlightened state of Buddhahood pre-exists a teacher. Pre-exists a human being having attained this clarity, teaching it to others. Buddhahood exists, period. So 13th century Japan, this is before science, before our modern tools of understanding. So this is how, actually, I shouldn't say 13th century. He's simply espousing the same words that were spoken 2,700 years ago, right? Thus, he continues, the Lotus Sutra says, quote, having taken his seat 10 small kalpas pass, and later, quote, the Buddha knew that the time had not yet come, and though they entreated, he sat in silence. So this would speak to the desire of human beings to aspire to something, some knowledge, some understanding much greater than their own understanding. Now, unfortunately, because of samsara, that quickly turns into looking for another source somewhere outside oneself, because I don't understand these great, amazing things that are happening around me, like a little baby in awe looking around, just trying to absorb it. There's, in our human mind, there must be something bigger than me, because look, it must be something that gave this to me, put this here. Right away, our human samsaric attachment to identity separates us and implies that there's something other. This is the source of every religion on earth. And yet, it's very obvious from, if you read this carefully, Buddhahood, Buddhism, the state of Buddha, clarity, pre-exists that. So it's not other, it's within. It's a manifestation of consciousness. That's the great other. It's our mental potential. But we deny it because it's so great, so wonderful, that we can't see that it is from our own minds. I hope that makes sense. Because it is a foundational point of Buddhism, that there is no great other. That the great other is a perceptive device of the human mind. It is from you and I. We create this, I hesitate to use the word other because it's not really other, is it? That's the first paragraph. Second paragraph. Likewise, Shakyamuni, the Lord of Teachings, in the present world, spent the first 40 and more years of his preaching life without expounding the Lotus Sutra, because, as the sutra says, the time to preach so had not yet come. People weren't ready to hear it. People were so ingrained in selfhood, in identity, that they didn't even conceive of the mechanism of mind that produced that attachment to identity. They were so identified with self that they didn't understand that it was identification. There was self, and everything else was other. So how do you begin to teach a mind that can't perceive of itself as separate from other, just as a perceptive filter of other, that they, in fact, are the perceiver, independent creation of self. It's a very complicated thing to understand. Today, we're very capable of understanding that. But this is evolution. This is 2,700 years ago. People simply did not think, could not think in that way, to start to dissect how they thought about a self that they themselves were creating that was way beyond their capacity. And that's why Buddhism says it was not the time. It was like trying to teach advanced physics or atomic theory or quantum theory to a four-year-old. No matter how eloquent you might speak of it in these concepts of matter and valent and covalent bonds and elemental charts, what you get from the four-year-old is, they're not capable. It is not the time to teach them this. They need far more fundamental understandings to build upon to get to that. So this right off the bat, from the words of the Lotus Sutra itself, right? Third paragraph. I won't keep doing that, but Lao Tzu. A lot of people know Lao Tzu as an author. Some people question his actual existence, that maybe he's just a straw man. But Lao Tzu, the teacher of the art of war. So you may, from popular movies and literature, you may remember Lao Tzu. Remained in his mother's womb for 80 years, waiting to be born. Again, this is not actual, right? This ideological. And Bodhisattva Maitreya abides in the inner court of the Tushita heaven for a period of 5,670 million years, awaiting the time for his advent in the world. The cuckoo sings when spring is waning. The cock waits until the break of day to crow. If even these lowly creatures have such an understanding of time, then how can a person who wishes to practice the teachings of Buddhism fail to make certain what time it is? So that's a little bit of a call for introspection. Consider how in your own life you are ruled by time, even now, today. If you sit and think about it for a while, it's pretty profound. It goes well beyond an alarm clock to go to work with the times of your life, the changes that you and I have been through our lifetime. The time. It's an important concept, and you must understand it as it applies to Buddhism, because this will dispel all of the doubts that you might have as to the why, which, as I've said before, why is a trap, because it traps us in this time business. But to understand it in respect to the teachings can be very useful. When Shakyamuni Buddha prepared to preach at the place where he had gained enlightenment, the various Buddhas made their appearance in the 10 directions, and all the great bodhisattvas gathered around. Brahma, Chakra, and the four heavenly kings came with their robes fluttering. The dragon deities and the 8 kinds of non-human beings pressed their palms together. Non-human beings pressing palms together. Do you see how illustrative this is of the mind and not actual physical reality? Please keep that in mind. The ordinary people of the superior capacity bent their ears to listen, and the bodhisattvas who, in their present bodies, have attained the stage where they perceive the non-birth and non-extinction of the phenomenal world, along with Bodhisattva Moon of Deliverance, all begged the Buddha to preach. But the world-honored one did not reveal a single word concerning the doctrines that hold that persons of the two vehicles can attain Buddhahood, or that he himself had attained enlightenment countless kalpas in the past, nor did he set forth the most vital teaching of all, those concerning a single moment of life encompassing the 3,000 realms and the fact that one can attain Buddhahood in one's present form. There was only one reason for this, the fact that although his listeners possessed the capacity to understand such doctrines, the proper time had not yet come. Or, as the Lotus Sutra says, the reason was that the time to preach had not yet come. But when Shakyamuni Buddha preached the Lotus Sutra to the gathering on Eagle Peak, the king, the great king, Ajatashatru, who had been the most unfilial person in the entire land of Jambudvipa, was allowed to sit among the listeners. Devadatta, who had spent his whole life slandering the law, was told that in the future he would become the thus come one heavenly king. And a dragon king's daughter, though impeded by the five obstacles, became a Buddha without changing her reptilian form. Those predestined for the realms of voice hearers and cause awakened ones were told that they would in fact become Buddhas. Like scorched seeds that unexpectedly sprout and put forth flowers and fruit, the Buddha revealed that he had attained enlightenment countless kalpas in the past, which puzzled his listeners as greatly as if he had asserted that an old man of 100 was the son of a man of 25. And he also expounded the doctrine of the 3,000 realms in a single moment, explaining that the 9 worlds have the potential for Buddhahood and that Buddhahood retains the 9 worlds. He's flying through every concept that we talk about here. The 10 worlds alone is quite a field of study if you really want to understand how the mind works, especially as Buddhism defines it. Thus, a single word of this Lotus Sutra is as precious as a wish-granting jewel. And a single phrase, it didn't say is a wish-granting jewel. It is as precious as a wish-granting jewel, right? So those of you who are misunderstanding this mandala as some kind of a wishing tool, you're missing the point. It's the preciousness. Why is it so precious? Because it is your enlightenment. It is Buddha nature itself that you are invoking, that you are focusing your mind on. That's what the mandala is for. It's not a wishing jewel. It's not a wish-granting jewel. It is your door to your own enlightenment. How precious is that? We may leave aside the question of whether Shakyamuni's listeners at that point possessed the capacity to understand such doctrines or not. The fact is that the time had come for him to preach them. As the sutra, in other words, the capacity was there. People were able to understand whether they did or not. That's on them. This is what Nichiren is saying. As the sutra says, quote, now is the very time when I must decisively preach the great vehicle, end quote. Question. Here we go with the question answer mode of teaching. So this is like we're sitting around and we're having a major course of study and discussion from Nichiren himself, right? Question. If one preaches the great law to people who do not have the capacity to understand it, then the foolish ones among them will surely slander it and will fall into the evil paths of existence. Is the person who does not, who does the preaching not to blame for this? It's a silly question. Answer. If a man builds a road for others and someone loses his way on it, is that the fault of the road builder? If a skilled physician gives medicine to a sick person, but the sick person, repelled by the medicine, refuses to take it and dies, should one blame the physician? Question. The second volume of the Lotus Sutra says, quote, do not preach this sutra to persons who are without wisdom, end quote. The fourth volume says, it must not be distributed or recklessly transmitted to others. And the fifth volume states, this Lotus Sutra is the secret storehouse of the Buddhas that thus come ones. Among the sutras, it holds the highest place. Through the long night, I have guarded and protected it, and I have never recklessly propagated it. End quote. These passages from the sutra would seem to indicate that one should not expound the law to those who do not have the capacity to understand it. Of course, that very question is a conundrum, right? How do you know that people have the capacity or do not have the capacity? Because it's not an individual person, it's the time. Answer. I refer you to the passage in the Never Disparaging chapter that states, quote, he would say to people, quote, I have profound reverence for you. And among the four kinds of believers, there were those who gave way to anger, their minds lacking in purity, and they spoke ill of him and cursed him, saying, this ignorant monk, end quote. The chapter also says, quote, some among the group would take sticks of wood or tiles and stones and beat and pelt him, end quote. And in the Encouraging Devotion chapter, it says, there will be many ignorant people who will curse and speak ill of us and will attack us with swords and staves, end quote. These passages imply that one should preach the law even though one may be reviled and cursed and even beaten for it. Since the sutra so teaches, is the one who preaches to blame? Question. Now these two views appear to be as incompatible as fire and water. May I ask how one is to resolve this dilemma? Answer. Tendai says, quote, the method chosen should be that which accords with the time. Chang'an says, you should let your choices be fitting and never adhere solely to one or the other. What these remarks mean is that at times the Buddhist teaching will be met with slander and one therefore refrains from expounding it for the present, and that at other times, even though one encounters slander, one nevertheless makes a point of preaching anyway. There are times when, although a few persons may have the capacity to believe, the great majority will only slander the Buddha's teachings, and one therefore refrains from expounding it for the present. And there are other times, although the great majority of people are bound to slander the Buddha's teaching, one nevertheless makes a point of preaching it anyway. When Shakyamuni Buddha first attained enlightenment and prepared to preach, the great Bodhisattva's Dharma wisdom, Forest of Merits, Diamond Banner, Diamond Storehouse, Manjushri, Universal Worthy, Maitreya, and Moon of Deliverance, as well as the Heavenly Lords Brahma and Chakra, the four heavenly kings and countless numbers of ordinary people of superior capacity came to hear him. When he preached at Deer Park, Ajnata Kundinya and the others of the five ascetics, along with Mahakashyapa and his 250 followers, Shariputra and his 250 followers, and 80,000 heavenly beings, all gathered to listen. At the ceremony of the Great Assembly for the Correct and Equal Sutras, the world honored one's father, King Suddhodana, displayed a sincere desire for the Buddha's teachings, and the Buddha therefore entered the palace and preached the meditation on the Buddha Sutra for him. And for the sake of his deceased mother, Lady Maya, he secluded himself in the heaven of the 33 gods for a period of 90 days, and there preached the Maya Sutra. Where his father and mother were concerned, one would think he could not possibly withhold even the most secret teaching of the law. And yet, he did not preach the Lotus Sutra for them. In the final analysis, the Buddha's preaching of the Lotus Sutra has nothing to do with the capacities of his listeners. As long as the proper time had not yet come, he would on no account expound it. So it isn't a mark of intelligence. It isn't that people are dumb or confounded or incapable in so much as their mental capacity. Because we can point to people today that seem like they'll never get it. Or he's so intellectual, he'll take this apart and, and that's my point. Whatever your earthly judgment of mental capacity, IQ, if you will, that measure, that has nothing to do with your capacity to practice Buddhism correctly. At this time, humanity has evolved to a point where this teaching is appropriate. As all of us, great, not great, intellectual, non-intellectual, whatever labels you want to put on it, our minds have developed, our brains have developed, our human mind, our consciousness has developed, so that the teachings of the Lotus Sutra are appropriate. What differs isn't our capacity. What differs is our individual paths, the way we make sense of the world, the way we perceive the world, our world, your world, my world, everybody's world, is unique to each individual. So regardless of IQ or intellectual or vocabulary, it doesn't matter. Because the essence of this teaching is that the Buddha is you. You simply need to get out of the way, get your attachments, understand how your mind works. And each of us will understand our own mind in our own way. Ultimately, however we come to that understanding, we will collect our path, our Buddha wisdom, to attain that which is universal, which we started this Gosho with. That universal clarity, that universal the way what life works, the process of life itself. It's not different for each of us, but each of us will realize it in our own way. That is the teaching of Buddhism. And to teach this when we're not ready to figure out that path is to mysticize it. And that serves no one, because that kind of creates a wall in front of your personal insight and enlightenment, does it not? It creates a don't go here, don't think about this, just accept. That's not Buddhism. That's religion. Because that's a tool to manipulate people. That's not Buddhism at all. Question. When is the time for preaching of the Hinayana Sutras and the Provisional Sutras, and when is the time for preaching the Lotus Sutra? Now, if you caught on to something I said earlier on, I talked about why there are different sects. This is a big one right here. Answer. Even bodhisattvas from those at the 10 stages of resolute mind to great bodhisattvas on the level of near perfect enlightenment find it difficult to judge matters concerning time and capacity. How then can ordinary beings such as ourselves be able to judge such matters? Question: Is there no way to determine them? Answer: Let us borrow the eyes of the Buddha to consider this question of time and capacity. Let us use the sun of the Buddha to illuminate the nation. What do you mean by that? Answer: In the Great Collection Sutra, Shakyamuni Buddha, the world-honored one of great enlightenment, addresses Bodhisattva Moon's storehouse and predicts the future. Thus, he says that the first 500 years after his passing will be the age of attaining liberation. The next 500 years, the age of meditation, making 1,000 years. The next 500 years will be the age of reading, reciting, and listening. And the next 500 years, the age of building temples and stupas, making 2,000 years. In the next 500 years, quarrels and disputes will arise among the adherents to my teachings, and the pure law will become obscured and lost. This is where we are today, folks. These 500-year periods, which total 2,500 years, are delineated in different ways by different people. The meditation master Dao Zhou of China declares that during the first four of the 500-year periods, which constitute the former and middle days of the law, the pure law of the Hinayana and Mahayana teachings will flourish. But that after the beginning of the latter day of the law, these teachings will all perish. At that time, only those who practice the pure land teaching, the pure law of the Nembutsu, will be able to escape the sufferings of birth and death. The Japanese priest Honen defines the situation in this way. According to him, the lotus flower garland, the Mahavacharana, and various Hinayana sutras that have spread in Japan, along with the teachings of the Tendai, True Word, Precepts, and other schools, constitute the pure law of the 2,000 years of the former and middle days of the law, referred to in the passage from the Great Collection Sutra cited above. But once the world enters the latter day of the law, all these teachings will be completely obliterated. Even though people should continue to practice such teachings, not a single one of them will succeed in escaping from the sufferings of birth and death. In other words, they won't attain Buddhahood. Thus, the commentary on the Ten Stages Sutra and the priest Dan Luan refer to such teachings as the difficult-to-practice way. Dao Chao declares that not a single person has ever attained Buddhahood through them. And Shen Dao says that, quote, not even one person in a thousand can be saved by them. After the pure law of these teachings has become obscured and lost, then the great pure law, namely the Three Pure Land Sutras and the single practice of calling upon the name of Amida Buddha, Amitabha, will make its appearance. And when people devote themselves to this practice, even though they may be evil or ignorant, 10 persons out of 10 and 100 persons out of 100 will be reborn in the Pure Land. This is the meaning of the passage. Only this doctrine of the Pure Land offers a road by which one can gain admittance. End quote. Honen therefore declares that if people desire happiness in the next life, they should withdraw their support from Mount Hiei, Toji, Onjoji, and the seven major temples of Nara, as well as from all the various temples and monasteries throughout the land of Japan, and should seize all the fields and land holdings that have been donated to these temples and devote these resources to building of Nembutsu halls. Now, there's a little clue, by the way, of something I've been saying all along. The relationship between religion and government. especially at this time in Japan with the shogunate. Very, you notice that this is the leader of a sect of Buddhism saying that we should seize all of the lands and holdings of these other temples. What does that have to do with Buddhism? That's government battling. That's politicians. So don't miss that. If they do so, they will be certain to be reborn in the Pure Land. Thus, he urges them to recite the words Namu Amida Butsu. It has now been more than 50 years since these teachings spread throughout our country. My refutation of these evil doctrines is now a thing of the past. There is no doubt that our present age corresponds to the fifth 500-year period described in the Great Collection Sutra when, quote, the pure law will become obscured and lost. But after the pure law is obscured and lost, the great pure law of Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, the heart and core of the Lotus Sutra, will surely spread and be widely declared throughout the land of Jambudvipa, with its 80,000 kingdoms, their 80,000 rulers, and the ministers and people in the domain of each ruler, just as the name of Amida is now chanted by the mouths of the monks, nuns, laymen, and laywomen in Japan. Okay, hold on. Question. What passages do you cite to prove this? Answer. The seventh volume of the Lotus Sutra says, quote, after I have passed into extinction in the last 500-year period, you must spread it abroad widely throughout Jambudvipa and never allow it to be cut off. This is in the Lotus Sutra itself, in Myoho Renge Kyo. Remember, that is the title of the Lotus Sutra, Myoho Renge Kyo, Saddharma Pundarika Sutra, if you're Indian. There are different pronunciations for it, but what we're talking about here is the teaching itself. Teaching that this is what should be taught. This indicates that to spread it abroad widely will be accomplished in the time after, quote, the pure law becomes obscured and lost, end quote, as the Great Collection Sutra puts it. Again, the sixth volume, so this is one of the talents of Nichiren, is he's able, yes, he can quote the Lotus Sutra. Yeah, great. But when he quotes something like this quote from the Lotus Sutra, he then refers to something that's hundreds, even thousands of years older, that predates, obviously, the teaching of the Lotus as far as spreading. Even during Shakyamuni's own life, he taught in these periods. And so when he taught the Collection Sutra, what's the name of it? The Great Collection Sutra. This was actually years before he taught the Lotus. So in Shakyamuni's own teachings, he is teaching to the capacity of the people, and he's foretelling something he's going to teach years later. So there's a common agreeance and thread throughout all of the teachings. This is one of the reasons Shakyamuni said you must study broadly all of the Buddhist teachings and non-Buddhist, because they all come to the same fruition. And that fruition, the word, is like the lotus blossoming, right? It comes to fruition. And as it blossoms, so too does it sow its own seeds. So this is the process of self-enlightenment. Buddhahood is inherent. It's a blossoming of the mind. Okay, we'll go a little further here, and then we'll give you time to consider, discuss, chant, think, meditate on what we've read so far. But so far, I mean, this should agree with everything we've read so far. All my lectures on Gosho and all my lectures on the Lotus Sutra and the Vimalakirti and the Lankavatara and the Wisdom Sutras, the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, they all follow what Nichiren is talking about here. There's a tremendous amount of consistency here. If you're attuned to it, you see it. Again, he continues, the sixth volume states, quote, in the evil age of the latter day of the law, if there is someone who can uphold the sutra, so on and so forth. The fifth volume states, quote, in the latter age hereafter, when the law is about to perish, and he makes his statement again. The fourth volume states, since hatred and jealousy toward the sutra abound even when the Thus Come One is in this world, how much more will it be so after his passing? And the fifth, and this is from the Lotus, so it's not just a random statement. It's a statement within the teachings, Myoho Renge Kyo. Because he's talking about the widespread throughout Jampadvipa here, right? The fifth volume says, quote, it will face much hostility in the world and be difficult to believe. And the seventh volume, speaking of the fifth 500-year period, which is the age of quarrels and disputes, says that evil devils, the devils as people, heavenly beings, dragons, yakshas, and kumbananda demons will seize the advantage. The Great Collection Sutra says quarrels and disputes will arise among the adherents to my teachings. The fifth volume of the Lotus Sutra similarly says, in that evil age, there will be monks, or there will be forest-dwelling monks and evil demons that will take possession of others. These passages describe the following situation. During the fifth 500-year period, eminent priests, or monks, who are possessed by evil demons will be found everywhere throughout the country. At that time, a single wise man will appear. The eminent monks who are possessed by evil demons will deceive the ruler, his ministers, and the common people into slandering and abusing this man, attacking him with sticks, staves, shards, and rubble, and condemning him to exile or death. Wow, does that sound like Nichiren's life? At that time, Shakyamuni, many treasures, and the Buddhas of the Ten Directions will speak to the great Bodhisattvas who sprang up from the earth. Us, and the great Bodhisattvas will in turn report to Brahma, Chakra, and the gods of the sun and moon and the four heavenly kings. As a result, strange occurrences and unusual disturbances will appear in abundance in the heavens and on earth. If there are countries whose rulers fail to heed this warning, then the Buddhas and the great Bodhisattvas will order neighboring countries to attack the evil rulers and evil monks of those countries. Then great struggles and disputes such as have never been known in the past will break out in Jampadvipa. Well, that was occurring, wasn't it? Still occurring, really. At that time, all the people living in the land, do you know how many wars are going on right now in the world over religion? Just pondering that unsettles me greatly. It motivates me to just chant, open my Butsudan, and just find some reasonable path of hope, as empty as that word can be sometimes, to simply have my Buddha nature comfort me, my Buddha nature, show me clarity, show me that this is the way that we navigate ignorance. That ignorance will always fall away. That spring always follows winter. Continuing, at that time, all the people living in the land, illuminated by the sun and moon, fearing the destruction of their nation or the loss of their lives, will pray to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas for help. Meditate. And if there is no sign that their prayers will be answered, they will put their resolute mind and conviction in this single humble priest monk who they earlier hated. So even though they spent all this time with their team vilifying Nichiren in this case, ultimately their lives will become so devoid of hope, enlightenment, wisdom, that they will come to Nichiren, come to the one who teaches the Lotus Sutra correctly, and ask for guidance. Then all the countless eminent monks, the great rulers of the 80,000 countries, and the numberless common people will all bow their heads to the ground, press their palms together, and in one voice will chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. It will be like that occasion during the Buddha's demonstration of his 10 supernatural powers, described in the Supernatural Powers chapter of the Lotus Sutra, when all the living beings in the world of the 10 directions, without a single exception, turned toward the Saha world and cried out together in a loud voice, Hail Shakyamuni Buddha, Hail Shakyamuni Buddha, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. We have a lot more to go. So this is just the beginning of Nichiren broaching the development and the pattern and the time and its relationship to the teachings in Buddhism. For me, it's a somber moment of realization. It's somber because it can seem overwhelming, the embattled planet right now. My mind goes to Yemen and Iran and the Soviet Union and North Carolina, Philadelphia, Wichita, California, Brazil. I can wander all over the world, and even though our media is so filtered, we know so little about what goes on in the world. We get little snippets here and there, but we're overwhelmingly self-obsessed in the West. Our news media is so focused on keeping us addle-minded and narrowly focused on our own little selfish battles in this country. Terrible though they are, I don't mean to minimize them, but we have such a small worldview, such an exceptionalism, it's what it's called. We really need to try harder to observe the rest of humanity, to observe what's going on in our world, not just our county, our city, our state. So you can't extrapolate that way. You can't say, well, this is happening here, so that's the world. That's a very, very small, limited view. Look at the whole world, and then from there, look back at your regional reality. You may find a lot of parallels, but the gravitas, the size of the issue will become much more clearly a mental decision than a petty circumstance war. The words of Buddha ring out throughout all of this. And it's immense. So yeah, it's when I ponder it, it's ominous, but it's also firmly roots our anchor in Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. And Myoho Renge Kyo is more and more obvious the pill, the solution, the pivot on which all life conditions depend. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. What an amazing, intense practice we have. and responsibility. But don't get overwhelmed by responsibility. Yes, the world is ours. The disgusting things that are happening all over the world, and including this country, Myanmar, Darfur, all of it. They are attached to us. They are us. We have the incredible fortune of being secure, at least for now. So it's incumbent upon us to constantly awaken our Buddha nature, to constantly keep alive in our minds enlightenment, the preciousness of life. And whenever we can, whenever appropriate, nudge, guide, help, assist others to this same path. However they choose to go, we can assist them. We can give them the tools, the road, the map. Ultimately, yes, it's up to them. We can't force people to be enlightened. It's our own path. We must share it so more and more people can pull away from all this ugliness. Be less influenced by it. And how do you become less influenced by anything? Negative influences? By building your own confidence. Building your own influence. And that starts with influencing yourself. This is a very self-motivated practice, because that's where it lies. That's where Buddhahood is. So, after you look around and you feel the weight of it all, please turn inward and increase your confidence that it will change. It may come to really real ugliness before it does, but it will change, and in great measure because of your own practice. This is for you to do, and I encourage you, please do it. Be confident about it. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. With deep, deep appreciation, thank you for watching. Thank you for coming to see the next one. Download the audio of these videos through podcasts. Get them anywhere. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Listen to them, share them, open discussions about them. Take care of yourself. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo.